Hi, and welcome to the Indie Music Podcast, the podcast for independent musicians and other music professionals. We're your hosts, myself, Matt Denton, also known as Mojo, of Ragged Birds Music. I'm a recording artist and mix engineer. And Douglas Reynolds of Resonance Studio, a mastering and recording engineer. Step out of the driving rain, maybe. Run from the darkness in the night. Hey, what's up?
Hey, what's happening?
Hey.
Somehow I missed recording that.
Sorry. So it's quite all right. How you doing, Doug?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
How's my level?
It's good. I have my mic a little bit closer tonight because I thought maybe it's been a little too far away in the last few episodes, and I thought it sounded a little thin. So
you know, it's funny that you said that. I was actually going to say that I don't know what you did differently, but I've had to, the last two episodes, I've had to EQ your voice differently. I used to have to high pass you at around, you know, between 80 and 100 for the low, and then, you know, give you some high mid. And the last couple episodes, I've had to do the opposite, like boost the low and hit you in the 200 range. It's been different.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this is a little better.
This sounds normal to me, but.
Does it?
Yeah.
Okay.
How do I sound? You know, so I've been working on my room. I've got it treated, almost done treated. And so I'm going to cut in before, do a before and after, and after. Before, do a before and after, to see what it sounded like last time I was in here and what it sounds like now, which I think it sounds okay.
Yeah, it's still a little live.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely not near as echoey as it was last time.
Yeah.
And so it's just like there's a little bit of a kind of a tight reverb on it right now.
Right, yeah, like a tight reverb is kind of how it sounds to me too. I'm going to have there's going to be a curtain opposite me. I'm not sure if that's an effect. And then right above my monitor, I'm going to have a bulletin board, I think, which I haven't picked out yet.
You know, cork would be good.
Yeah.
Because it's a good sound absorber.
Yeah, I have a few things to like tack on. Reminders and whatnot. But yeah, it's coming along. So here's the thing, and this is a tangent. As we did talk about it last time, and it's kind of something I've been working on and thinking about. As I was working on this room, it occurred to me that I have four different sound goals that I've been trying to accomplish. And I guess I didn't know that I really realized that at the outset, and this is something that people can think about at home. The first one, of course, is you want to keep sound out, right? You want to keep outside sounds from coming in. And we talked about that last time. The other is you want to keep inside sounds from getting out. They're kind of the same thing, but not the same thing. I find that keeping sounds out is way harder than keeping sounds in.
Yeah.
The other two things that I've been trying to do without kind of differentiating them or realizing that they were different. One was getting the room treated for mixing purposes, like having a kind of a flat sound for when I have the monitors on and having it not be too, you know, live or colored or, you know what I mean? And the other, which I haven't even tried yet, but realized after the fact is another thing that I'm trying to do is for when I record, I'm going to record vocals in here. Well, I guess I am right now technically recording vocals in here, but I meant like singing vocals or other. So treating the room for flatness for recording as opposed to flatness for mixing, I think that might be a different thing, at least in terms of proximity to sound sources. So it's interesting when you think about all the different reasons you treat a room and then how you would treat it accordingly. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you might want for recording, depending on the room and the size of the room and the height of the ceilings, and you might want to have a lot of that room in it.
Yeah.
Because it has desirable, you know, characteristics about it. And also depending on the genre or what it is that you're actually recording, maybe it's not music, maybe it's spoken word or something like that.
Like this.
Or voiceover.
Yeah.
And you want it to be absolutely dead with the lowest sound floor you can get.
Right.
And no reverberation. What I've done in my studio is I have an area set up for that. So I have, basically, I built a booth.
Okay.
And it's completely surrounded in the booth with 1-inch rock wool. I lined the walls and the ceiling with it, and I put a carpet down.
Oh, nice.
Just like a throw rug. Yeah. It's got an open front on it, so it opens up into the room.
Okay.
And what I found with that, the rest of the room is treated too, but it gives me the opportunity to move in or out or somewhere in between of that booth to get different characteristics.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it works really well. So it's just a matter of which direction is the artist facing, mm-hmm. and where is the mic placement, you know, and how far in or out of the room, because it may be the artist is like, I'd like this to be a little bit more live. And then all we got to do is move a foot and a half in one direction, you know, out of the booth, and we get a more live sound. So I kind of like it. You know, it's not your typical vocal booth that's completely surrounded. Right. I have a room divider that I use, uh-huh. and I have just a large blanket that I throw over the room divider. So when I want to enclose it, I just bring the room divider over with the blanket.
Is that like a moving blanket kind of thing?
No, this one's actually just a really nice big plush blanket. Oh, cool. It works really, yeah.
Well, that's cool. And you just gave me an idea. When I go to, I'm going to have to do a recording test and like figure out which is the optimal direction to face when recording vocals. I have not done that yet. I mean, I'm doing that right now, obviously, but this is not like singing vocals. This is not like musically inclined. This is strictly spoken word. I'm talking, you know, through my Luit directly at the screen that I'm looking at, which may be one of the sources of the short reverb you're hearing. But yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, I kind of have an idea of where the best mic placement will be, but again, I have curtains on the way that are going to show up, I think Saturday, and I'll put those in and then this room will be almost basically done with sound treatment.
Yeah. Give it a try. The little room dividers are fairly inexpensive. Mm-hmm. You know, you can find those around for probably $25 or something like that. Yeah, put it behind you.
Yeah.
Put a big heavy blanket draped over it. And, you know, anything that's coming as a reflection back off the wall in front of you is gonna die in that blanket.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought.
And if you put cork in front of you or whatever it is that you're planning on doing, then you'll be covered. I know it'll make a big difference if you try something like that.
Yeah. It is a small room. It's only, you know, I mean, it's 8x15, or at least it was before I put the, you know, the drywall on. One thing I wanted to mention before we move on to our actual topic of the night, which was there's a kind of a built-in advantage that, you know, the whole, there's kind of this stigma maybe of bedroom producers or bedroom artists. And, you know, your bedroom, it already is sound treated. It's got a bed, it's got carpet, it's got windows that drapes, it's got bookcases, it's got all this stuff in it that, you know, you don't have to line the walls with a bunch of expensive sound treatment. It's already absorbing and diffusing and doing all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's why I have a couple of fabric chairs behind me.
Nice.
And not only is it a place for people to sit when they're in my studio listening.
It's a diffuser.
It's a diffuser and an absorber.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, furniture. And another interesting thing I just heard, and I'm going to actually experiment with it, is plants.
Yeah. I don't know where to put one now, but I want a couple plants in here somewhere.
Yeah. So they'll have the characteristic of kind of diffusing sound as well. I don't have any plants. Actually, I don't have any. My studio doesn't have any access to daylight, so mm-hmm. I'm completely surrounded by concrete walls.
Well, philodendrons don't mind. Philodendrons are the quintessential office plant. You know, they have the big kind of spade-shaped leaves, and they do fine with like occasional and fluorescent light and minimal watering.
I'm not sure about fluorescent. I have to.
They don't mind fluorescent if you have it.
Yeah, but I'm wondering if I'll get like EM disruption from fluorescent
lighting. Oh, I'm not saying add it if you don't have it, because fluorescent light's terrible. I'm just saying that's one of the reasons they don't mind it. That's why they're a good choice for an office plant.
Yeah. I think there's some full spectrum bulbs that aren't fluorescent mm-hmm. that would work. And I could hang a couple from the ceiling or something like that over the top of the plants and put them on a timer or something.
Yeah. I think they also kind of help mellow the vibe in a room. I don't know if that's like a electromagnetic thing or just a oxygen thing or a color thing or all of the above. I don't know what that is, but they just kind of mellow things out to have a plant. Unless, unless they get bugs or something.
Right.
And buggy plants are awful. Don't overwater your plants, people.
Right. And actually, we're kind of in it because that's been part of my studio planning process. What kinds of things do I want? Not only are things like plants nice because they, if you're spending any decent amount of time in a room and you want to make it so that it's got a good vibe for you and things like that, you know, and I think plants for me, I think plants add something to just the whole good feels of hanging out in a room.
Oh, totally. You know?
And that's something as far as what do I want my studio to be as I continue to evolve it? Things like that are important. What gives you the vibe that feels good, you know, lighting and, plants and furniture, like you said, and stuff like that.
Yeah. So what we're really talking about tonight, this is the big segue right here is buying gear, buying things with a purpose, buying things to fill a need rather than responding to, you know, the latest video, the latest email, sale email, plugins are on sale, gear is on sale, Black Friday, all this stuff where you kind of get that, oh, I got to have that. Oh, I want that. And this is kind of like, we had this discussion earlier about, well, this is on my list of things to buy and here's why. This is something I'm buying now and here's why. And it has to do with having an actual need for something and having a reason to buy it.
Yeah.
And buying it consciously is not the word I'm looking for, but with intent, with purpose, and with a real need.
Right. You know, and we joke about with plugins and stuff like that because it's probably the the most abused thing that people buy without any actual need associated with it. It's all, hey, that's cool. I want it. I'm not even sure how I'm going to use it yet, but that looks like it would be neat to try out.
Well, that's it really. Cause like you get, you know, you see it, it's on sale. Somebody makes a video about how it's great. I don't know if they got it for free or they're paid to do that. And then you go watch a couple of videos and then you're like, wow, that is a really cool compressor. And you don't even stop to think, well, I already have 50 compressors and I only use, I only use five of them. What do I need another compressor for?
The other 45, I have no idea how to use
Right. I've never even opened half of them and tried them on a mix, you know? Cause I think part of it is we all have our little, and I know Waves knows this. I know Plugin Alliance knows this. You have your kind of price point sweet spot. Like, I want to say like $29. It's kind of that like, it's only $29.
Yeah.
I can do that. But it's $29 and you buy three of those and that's $100. And hey, that's, now you're talking about kind of real money, you know?
Yeah.
You can get another SM58 for that.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, don't discount other things like the furniture and the desk that you're working at.
Or the chair you're sitting in. Oh, my God. That's like the chair is to your office what shoes is to your outfit.
Yeah.
Like if you don't have good shoes, you're going to have knee pain and back pain and hip pain and foot pain. Yeah. And if you're sitting in a chair, that's like your literal most important piece of office equipment right there.
It really is. And I suffered in a poor chair for a couple of years, started having like my knees started hurting. I mean, I just started having pain, you know?
Yeah.
You know, at that point in time, I was like, this has actually become a necessity for a chair. And I want a chair that's going to last me a long time, that I'm going to be comfortable to sit in for, you know, long periods of time. Up to 2 hours at a time is generally my session time before I get up and take a break and things like that. So I need to be able to feel good and comfortable for a couple hours and not have the chair be something that's interfering with my creative process, you know?
Yeah, it's hugely important. I just got rid of the chair that I'd been in, which was comfortable enough, but it wasn't great for sitting in and working in for long periods of time. And I like this office chair that I got at Costco enough that I've bought three of them now, and we each have one. I think that no matter how good your chair is, any, you know, a session longer than 90 minutes or 2 hours is probably, that's just not good for anybody. You got to get up and walk around, rest your eyes, rest your ears, stretch your legs. it's not only true on airplanes, it's true in your office. But I'm pretty happy with this one.
So I think what in our discussion earlier, kind of what I wanted to impart was to actually plan what it is that you need.
Sure. Yeah.
In advance and get rid of the spontaneous buys.
Right.
You know, not 100% because, I mean, have fun, live little, you know, but really have a purpose in mind and a pre-planned, premeditated idea of what it is that's actually going to solve problems or do things that you're trying to accomplish, whatever that may be, you know, in your craft. And for me, you know, I just posted a kind of a 3D model of what I want my new studio layout to be. Oh, yeah,
that was very cool.
That was like the first step in my planning. I was like, I need to know what's the environment layout, because that's going to help me determine what kind of things I need. What do I have, what I currently have, and how will those things that I currently have work in this new layout? And what things am I going to need to complete the layout plan that I have, you know? And that's thinking in terms of acoustics and you know, diffusion and things like that. It's thinking in terms of a table and where I'm going to place amplification, mm-hmm. where the speakers are going to go. But everything kind of is based on where's my desk and which direction am I facing,
right.
You know, because that's going to be the listening position. And everything kind of is determined by that.
Are you keeping your current desk?
I am. I'm probably going to modify the top of it mm-hmm. because right now, as I'm sitting at my table, at my desk, I have an iMac in front of me, and it's a 27-inch screen. Mm-hmm. And as I will evolve my studio, I'm going to be getting some more midfield or even far field monitoring. And in which case the screen is a big block to the sound.
Oh, right.
And so I'm kind of planning on how I'm going to do that. And so I'm probably going to make a new top that has a notch cut out of it that's a little bit wider than the width of my computer. And I'm going to lay it down in it with an angle so that I can look at it. But it's only going to be maybe 6 or 7 inches up off the top of the table.
Okay.
So that it's not a big block to the audio that's trying to make it to me. And right now I can see that's like one of the biggest things I'm trying to solve. So I'm probably going to take a floor stand with, you know, an adapter to, I can't remember the name of that adapter right now, to, you know, mount to the back of the monitor. That has like a 60-degree pivot to it. And so that I can really kind of lay it back and then it would be able to slide underneath the desk a bit and with the computer laying flatter.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm still going to need some angle because I need to be able to see it clearly. And then I'm also going to be putting another display up on the wall.
Okay.
One of the problems that I have is that I want to have my metering on its own screen.
Oh, that's a cool idea.
So that my metering isn't always in the way of my mastering plugins and things like that. Right. I always need to have my metering on because I'm always checking to make sure that the last move I made, what effect did it have on the levels, adjusting the levels and then checking the metering to ensure that I'm continuing through my session working at consistent levels. Because if I'm doing things and changing the volume, then I risk being fooled that something sounds better because it's louder.
Yeah.
So that's like a main concern.
Sure.
And so getting those meters up where I can see them, and those, you know, I can make big and see at a distance. I could put those, you know, 8 feet away or whatever and, you know, on a monitor on the wall and be able to see those with no problem and then just work off of two screens.
Yeah, I like that idea, having the metering separate so that it's not floating windows above what you're actually trying to do is a really cool idea.
And so, you know, that idea and the separate display, that's based on a need that I've had for improving my workflow and not having to shuffle windows around all the time, you know, to do for things. And so that's the kind of line of thought that, you know, I'm trying to practice.
Yeah. So ultimately you're talking about efficiency of workflow for yourself, but really what you're talking about, which is what we're talking about overall, is kind of like solving a problem, making sure that whatever it is you're purchasing or thinking of purchasing or looking at doing is to solve a specific problem and not just because it's cool or you want it. And I feel like sometimes with, I don't know, maybe not so much in mastering, but definitely in mixing, there can be this tendency. You can go down this rabbit hole of going, oh, this doesn't sound right. Let me throw a plugin at it. Oh, that doesn't sound right either. Let me throw another plugin. And then you got like, you know, 10 plugins on it. And what you really needed was to just like do an EQ cut and a volume yeah. boost and not try to solve it with a bunch of extra stuff. And like, you know, really because you didn't ask yourself, what problem am I trying to solve? And so when you're talking about your studio space or your workflow, you go, okay, wait a minute, step back. What problem am I trying to solve? Is my interface doing everything that I need it to do? Okay, well, then I probably don't need to upgrade to an interface that costs twice as much. Is my microphone yeah. doing everything that I need it to do? If it's not, then maybe that's where you want to make a wish list of what you're going to put money to next. Like, what's the bare minimum that you need? What's the next level thing that you need? And what problems do you have that you are trying to solve by upgrading from your current situation or putting something in that you don't have? That's really the kind of the way to think about it. It's just like, take that step back and go, okay, what am I trying to fix? What problem am I trying to solve? What's my roadblock here? Or does it just look cool and it's on sale? that's not a good reason to spend money that you don't have.
Right. You had mentioned the coolest new thing. I just want to say that it's okay if you're needing something that solves the problem that it also happens to be cool.
Oh, sure.
You know, that's a bonus. And, you know, I'm all for that. Whenever I'm trying to do something or making my choice as to what it is that I need, there's definitely... I'm also interested in how it looks or mm-hmm. how it works with other things in my system. And oftentimes I'm not looking for one thing that does 40 different things. Right. I really like things that do one or two things really well and they're not like fully featured.
Yeah, that's kind of the opposite of the kitchen. I don't know if you watch Alton Brown. You know, he always was. He hates the unitasker. He calls it the thing that takes up space in your kitchen drawer, but only does one thing, or takes up countertop space, but it only does one job. That's a waste. But I think that it's the opposite in like our world, the audio world. It's like if you have a compressor and all it does is compress, but it does it really well, and it doesn't try to do a whole bunch of other stuff. You know, it's not a multi-feature plugin that. You know, it's not trying to be a Swiss Army knife, then right. it might be better than, you know, something else.
Yeah, agreed. You know, and that, I guess that's kind of like if, in terms of a mix bus type of thing, mm-hmm. you know, those have so much going on. The learning curve is really pretty big on them. It takes a while to actually just work. You remember that episode where we had the challenge? Let's use the mix bus plugins that we had. That we've never really used before, right. and just as a matter of getting to know them, you know, and even in that exercise, my level of knowledge and using that plugin that I had was still fairly superficial after that exercise, you know, and that was after using it for like 5 days in right. a row of working on that mix. I didn't have full 5 days in it. I don't remember how many hours we were also tracking that. Yeah. But, you know, over 5 days, I put a number of hours into it and, you know, whatever that was. And at the end of that time, I knew where things were located, but I hadn't got a feel for what's my go-to here to get this specific result from it yeah. type of familiarity, you know. And that just takes a long time.
I think it does.
Yeah, and that just goes back to... We were joking about having 50 plugins and five of them are all we use. And the other 45, we don't know anything about. Right. And that's, you get to know five plugins really well. You can be very proficient and get things done and things that sound good because you get to know those plugins well.
I agree.
And those plugins have good characteristics and sounds to them. You know, that you've chosen. That's why you use all five all the time because they sound good.
Yeah, it's funny. I was watching a mix tutorial from somebody I'd never watched a mix tutorial from before. And, you know, he didn't seem to have any, you know, religion about, oh, I like Waves plugins or I like UAD plugins. He just kind of had to mix and match of ones that were his favorites that he seemed to use on every mix, which I thought was kind of fascinating because he's watched somebody like Warren Hewitt, who is always just like, well, let's just use this one and let's just use that one. And I feel like he's being diplomatic. He probably has his own favorites, but you don't necessarily see it in his.
Yeah.
And like Dave Pensado, he's always talking about, oh, this is a cool new one that somebody showed me. And some people are all about, you know, like using new plugins all the time just to see what the best ones are. But it was very clear that this guy who makes really good mixes, and I'm forgetting his name right now, but he has his favorites and he sticks to his favorites and he uses his creativity, his mixing creativity on his intent and on how he wants the mix to sound and how shaping it with his favorite plugins, which I thought was kind of like a kind of fascinating to me to not go, okay, well, let's pull this one in and see how this sounds. Oh, let's pull in this one and see how it sounds. It was more like, I have my favorites. I know what it does. Here I'm putting it on and I'm going to make it sound like this, the way I want it to sound, and it's going to come out good. And that was a whole different kind of mind shift for me.
You know, and this is, I think, what brings this whole personality in and over time defines an engineer's sound.
Yeah.
Why does Shep's sound the way he does? Why does his production sound the way it does? It's because over time he's evolved and created his own sound based on the decisions that he's made and how he uses the tools that he has.
Exactly.
And, you know, and this definitely extends beyond digital here, you know, and definitely out into the rack and outboard gear. Everything that we're talking about, you know, and the sounds of specific equipment, and maybe even, you know, more so in the rack, like characteristics of like an 1176 and things like that. It's hard to find plugins that, if it's even possible, that really do it justice. And there's a lot of talk and a lot of really heated talk about this, you know?
Yeah.
But I believe that each has their own character.
Sure.
And plugins do things really well in some cases where hardware does other things really well. Mm-hmm. And so as far as my studio planning goes, I really am moving into a place where I want to become more of a hybrid because I think there's a best of both worlds there. And that's causing me to have a look at what are my needs related to things that hardware might solve for me better than digital. And if you work with anybody's music that's been mixed on hardware, on analog gear, and you do it a bit, you will become familiar with, wow, that decapitator is something that I just cannot get the same quality of out of a digital piece of gear. Mm. And I can't, okay? I try, but that piece of hardware is just very unique. It has its own characteristic, and it's just not something that I have found that a piece of digital gear has been able to recreate faithfully.
Even the actual decapitator plugin?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it actually has the same quality that you get from the piece of hardware.
Interesting.
I think it's a good close representation, but you just don't get the same transformer warmth and vibe, you know? There's something there that just isn't quite so clean. And that's a thing that's really hard to explain, you know? That's like trying to explain to you what the color blue is. Mm-hmm. How do you explain to somebody that's blind, that's never or has never seen the color blue?
Yeah.
And how do you tell them what blue is, you know? And that's kind of like trying to describe the quality of a piece of hardware and how it compares to something else, you know?
Well, I just had a funny thought while you were talking, which is we were talking about plugins and choices, and you know, you got 50 compressors, and obviously if you have a studio and it has a finite space and you have X amount of dollars and you buy an actual hardware 1176, what does that cost? Like an actual one?
Oh man, I'm not sure.
I mean, I know that the
2200 bucks, yeah, 2300
like
bucks.
Tiger King or whatever it's called, the knockoff is like 1200. Anyway, so you buy a piece of hardware. I mean, let's pretend it costs, you know, $1,500. You get it from your buddy. and you own that now, you're going to use it because you've invested in it, and you're going to learn it, and you're going to learn where you can use it and how it sounds and what you can do with it. And you're going to spend some time making it worth your while to get to know it as well as you possibly can and use it wherever it would fit. If you have, you know, a virtual rack of $29, you know, virtual plugins that you can flip through, you know, like a deck of cards, you're never going to learn any of those as well as you would a piece of hardware that you've invested in, that you own and is sitting in your room, you know, drawing electricity and heating up your space.
Right.
So I think that might be a factor in, you know, in having a hybrid or analog situation where you know your gear inside and out because you own it, it's sitting there next to you, versus having a bunch of virtual stuff that, you know, you can literally click in and out with such ease that you don't even think about it, and you never really get to know it that well because you don't spend that much time with it.
Right. And there's actually some pieces of gear out that I'm really interested in that are bridging the gap, that are digitally controlled analog units. Mm-hmm. So you basically have a plugin that exists in your DAW, and it is, you use it like any other plugin, and it controls an actual piece of hardware that's in your rack, the Tegeler Krem, which is a kind of a combination EQ compressor. And TC Electric has got some really neat mastering pieces that are coming out that have physical hardware controllers for the plugin in the DAW. Those are actually, that's one where I've been looking at and trying to force a need.
trying to justify the purchase.
Yeah, but everything that they're putting out, I already really have solutions for. And I was like, you know, it really isn't a need. And so, like I said, I'm trying to make those decisions better now. Yeah. And really put a weight on how much do I actually need something to solve a problem? What do I already have?
Yeah.
And so with that, you know, as sexy as the TC Electric, is it TC Electronic?
I think it's TC Electronic.
The TC Electronic pieces are, they're not meeting the requisite of need that I actually have because I already have this stuff covered.
Yeah. Yeah. I have monitors. I have not used them in a long time. Now they finally have a place to live. And I'm looking at them and I feel like they won't be my long-term monitors. They're my short-term monitors, and I already have new ones picked out, and I don't need new ones today, but I have a list of things, starting with a second interface so that I don't have to take this one out of here and take it into the house. Is my first thing on my list of things to buy. And that's an actual need that I have right now, that I'm going to fill. Monitors, that can wait a little bit. Finishing the sound treatment, that's important. I have a list and it's prioritized, and it's prioritized by actual need. I don't want to lie. I don't want to say I no longer buy things I don't actually need, because once in a while a plug-in sale comes along that I just can't resist. But
sure.
I do have a list of plugins that I'm not buying because I'm waiting for, you know, Cyber Monday or whatever, that I don't need right now. I know that they're on my list. I can wait. I can be patient.
I just bought 6 yards of black burlap.
Oh, are you going to make some panels?
Yeah, actually, I've got different color burlap on the pan. I made all my acoustic panels. Nice. And I've got different colors because they fit better in a different space I was in. Mm-hmm. And now I kind of want to go a little more monochrome. So I thought, you know, I'm gonna recover these all in black.
Cool.
And get contrast off my kind of off-white color on my walls.
Yeah, I like it.
And yeah, and you know, just change that up a little bit, because, and then I want to add some accent color with, like, I don't know, I kind of like some of these LED light things that I've been seeing, you know, when you run that LED tape like behind the acoustic panels, and you get some indirect lighting that's sort of washing on the wall behind it. And I think that's kind of cool. So I might do something like that.
That's cool. Oh, yeah. That reminds me. I have not bought Christmas lights. I have all the hooks in. But you know, it's not Christmas season yet, so I'm kind of waiting.
Are you going to get those like bigger bulb ones? You know,
I don't know yet. Kinda... I haven't decided. I'm kind of holding that decision off, but, everything that's one of those. So you got your aesthetic choices. It's not unimportant. You know, you want to be comfortable in your space. And if you have other people in, you want them to be comfortable. You want it to have a certain vibe. Vibe is an important consideration.
I think
in a music studio, in a workspace, in a living space, it's just as important. So this is an interesting room because it's a combination of vibes. It's one half is a studio, the other half is a study space, and they're two completely different vibes. One is dark, the other is a lot of natural light. It's kind of fun that way. My son, who I'm sharing the space with on a Google Docs schedule, he likes it because he thinks of it as his dorm room, he said. And my wife was laughing. And he's like, yeah, I like the way my half is decorated. I don't like the way dad's half is decorated. And my wife's like, yeah, just like an actual dorm room with a roommate that you may or may not completely get along with. You don't get to decide when they show up and when who's studying when and how they decorate their half of the room. That kind of thing.
You haven't like laid a piece of like masking tape down across
the floor yet or anything, have you? Okay. This is my son. No, it's funny though. It's funny. Yeah, it's a interesting situation, but we're working it out. This is only his second week of school, so this is it's like every week around here is a new reality to adjust to. I don't know what to say about that. It's cool. It's all cool.
But yeah, you know, I think we got our point across that.
I think so.
It's all about intention.
Intention is the word I was looking for. Yes.
Yeah. I think it's, especially from a business point of view, having a plan and creating intention, you know, as you discover things and doing that whole plan, you know, having a process where you're able to educate yourself about what it is that your needs actually are.
Yeah, that's important.
And if you haven't yet, you know, once you start getting a lot of work to do, and now that could be work that you created for yourself in your compositions and, you know, your own recording. That could be work coming in from others, whatever. But as you get into the process of doing it a lot, you discover so much about how you can make improvements to what it is that you're going to do.
Yes.
You can't make those discoveries without actually doing it. So you need to somehow practice what it is that you do. And if that means compose more and record more to really understand and practice with your tools, then you're going to learn how some things are kind of in the way and preventing you from doing things better or more efficiently or, you know, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
And you'll discover, wow, if I could improve this, it would really make this easier and more fun. And, you know, and those discoveries are really cool. They make me excited sometimes because especially when you find a good solution and then all of a sudden you reap the benefit of the discovery and applying a fix to your system,
yes.
You know, and then, you know, and the machine becomes even more well-oiled, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I love that. Yeah, anything you do more than once is a candidate for a system. Yeah. And if you're not in a hurry to solve a problem, like you don't have an urgent need, then you have time to find a more creative solution as long as you write down your needs and maybe prioritize them, you know, in terms of furniture or, you know, decorations or something that, you know.
I will actually suffer through a problem. I mean, intentionally.
Yeah.
Just and go through it over and over and over again until I feel like I really have an understanding of why it's a problem.
Yeah.
What is the deal? You know, and look at the amount of time that this is taking me to achieve this. There's got to be a better way. But when you really understand by having gone through it over and over again, it gives you a point of self-knowledge of what it is that you really want in order, you know, and how you think you can solve that problem. And then you go looking for it, you create it yourself, whatever it is, however, you know, whatever the situation is. And then you apply it with that intent and knowledge behind it. And I promise that it's so much better than just saying, I think I have a problem here and I'm going to throw something at it and see how it works, you know?
Yeah, you can always throw money at a problem, but that's not always the right solution. Sometimes, like you said, I think you said it better than I possibly could, which is, you know, suffering through it long enough that the answer kind of presents itself to you. And that's when you know you're ready to solve it. And well done.
I guess that comes back to, you know, my whole Muad'Dib philosophy of a process cannot be understood by stopping it. You must flow with the process to understand it.
Oh, I love a good Dune quote. Man, I can't. I'm so sad that they had to put that movie off until next year. Wear a mask, everybody. Let's get through this. Come on. Wear a mask. I got movies to see. I got bands to see. Come on.
Yeah.
All right. Man, Doug, it's so great to talk to you all the time.
Yeah, good to talk to you, Matt. It's been a little bit longer this time. Our schedules have definitely been out of sync a little bit, but it's good to kind of come get back here.
Yeah. So. Feels good to get back in the swing. All right. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. Thanks. I hope everybody's doing well with everything going on right now. And we appreciate your time and interest.
Yes, we do. All right. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers. Take care. Good night.
Be well.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for another episode of the Indie Music Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, leave us a comment or a review and share with your friends. Hit us up on our website at indiemusiccast.com. Find myself on Twitter at Mojo's Army. Find Douglas on Twitter at Rezo Studio. Thanks. Until next time, keep creating.